Now that they know Teresa is hiding here, the underdwellers have forsaken any sense of subtlety. I watched as a group of underdwellers walked into town escorted by their twisted abominations. They seemed to be occupying it. I can't figure out why they would be interested in it, but I see they have returned electricity to my town and that the internet is working again. My best guess is that they don't know how to access our communication systems with their own technology, so they have to use ours instead. They have sent new monstrosities beyond just the Wolvenir. These new creatures, I've settled on calling behemoths, shake the earth with every stomp. I haven't had a look at the behemoth yet. I have only felt the quakes and heard the roars. Alongside them, winged bat-like creatures have begun circling the area as scouts. They shriek in extremely high-pitched volumes and swarm at the sight of prey. They lift whatever they find into the air, and in a frenzy rip it to shreds so fast it would make piranhas quiver in fear. The poor grizzly bear never stood a chance. I fashioned a car together using nails and boards. Teresa must have made as spares for her home. I am too afraid to leave her home alone in the shack, but we still need food and water. The monsters are less active during the daytime, so I've been wheeling her to and from the river to catch what fish and game I can. I could only go for small game. I fear the scent of blood would attract the creatures to my location. I've been working up the courage to plan our escape, and I think tomorrow is the day. The shipping truck will be coming in, and I plan to get us onto it and run to the outside world. As I was making preparations for tomorrow, I heard a soft growl from behind me. I turned immediately and saw Teresa was beginning to stir. My heart flustered with joy as I rushed over to Teresa to help her up.
"You're alive!
Teresa, you've been gone for so long, I didn't know, I couldn't tell." "It will require so much more than a stab to the ribs to slay this warrior," she smirked. As we tried to lift her to a sitting position, the pain on her wound flared. She growled as I slowly tried to lift her up, but the pain must have been excruciating. Her eyes grew fierce and she flung me off of her with one arm. I went soaring into the wall and she continued to pick herself up. With a yell that shook the whole shack, she rose to her feet. Her eyes filled with red and an immense energy emitted from her. Even without being able to see it, I could feel the power she was exerting. It was terrifying. When she had finally risen to her feet, I felt the power fade back into her. She let out an exhausted sigh and turned to me. "Where are my sword and armor?" Her eyes have returned to normal, the red pupils now again their normal stunning emerald. She seemed to be the same Teresa as before, but her actions felt off. "Over in the corner, I had to remove them so I could bandage your wound." I looked down at her side and see that the stab wound that I had been bandaging was now fully healed. Not even a scar remained in the spot where the wound once existed. The wound didn't even heal a bit when I was caring for her. I looked back up towards her gaze. "It was not the wound that ailed me. It was the venom of the dagger used," she stated calmly as she turned to inspect her armor. "So this is the weak spot, I see. When bent in this position, it opens a gap just wide enough," she mutters to herself while adjusting her armor in different angles, looking for different vulnerabilities. I don't know what to do except to wait for her to be finished. After taking several mental notes, she turns back to me. "Upgrades should not take long, but I need to know the situation. What is the status of the village? How long have I been asleep? Enough to cause you alarm? What does not bode well?" Teresa speaks unlike her normal self. This Teresa is a matter of fact. No hope, no cheer. And I began to wonder if the venom she spoke of on that knife damaged her brain, or if she is showing her true nature. "You've been asleep for almost a month. The town, everyone, it's all been razed. I haven't seen any signs of life since the night you were hurt. The underdwellers have deployed more kinds of monsters, and they even have slipped into town and are using things in there. The electricity was out for about a week, but now it's been restored, and the internet is connected again. I think they are trying to gather intelligence on humans. I give Teresa all the information I can think of, but when I look at her in the face again, she only has one question.
Everyone is dead?
She stands firm, but from her unflinching expression, tears flow like waterfalls down her face.
I cannot say for sure, but they seem to search the houses for us. I don't think there was anyone spared,
I reply, feeling an icy grip in myself as I state the reality I've been hiding from all this time. I dedicated myself to caring for Teresa, but at the same time I used that fixation to avoid having to confront the truth. Everyone I once knew is gone.
I see. So there's no rescue to perform. It's already too late.
Her armor slips from her fingers and slaps onto the heavy thud against the floor. Her knees give out, and she stares blankly into the floor while teardrops still fall from her face. I finally recognized why it seemed like she was acting strange. She was acting as general preparing for battle. But by the time she arrived, the battle was already over and everyone's lost. Centuries of guardianship destroyed in an instant. I got back up and kneeled down in front of her. I held her and she returned my embrace, and together we let out our plan. After a long while, her grip on me loosened and we both sat on the floor facing each other.
I don't know what I am to do with myself anymore, Teresa said in a broken whisper. Though the centuries were short, I had grown so attached to your people. I loved their kindness, their cuteness, and how much life they lived in so little time. I had made it my purpose to protect them until the day the Underdwellers attacked humanity. Instead, my presence instigated the Underdweller attack, which resulted in them being all slain. How am I to move forward, Toby? How do I breathe with this guilt, which tightens like a vice around my neck and chest?
I think hard about the questions that she asks, and for a while we sit in silence until I realize I already know the answer, and so does she. How do I live with this guilt? She taught me how to live with it, how to keep moving regardless of it. You must make a new vow, a new purpose to pursue. Think about the actions you could do to give justice to the lives lost. Live to bring justice for those who have been stolen from us. We must not allow the Underdwellers to go unpunished, I said in revelation. The spark of inspiration is ignited inside me.
To punish the Underdwellers, to bring justice to the lost, I can do that. But when it is all done, my problem rises again. What purpose do I serve beyond that?
Her eyes are closed as she speaks. I think you are asking the wrong species, unfortunately. Many humans go their whole lives without even knowing what their purpose may serve. But some questions do not have answers. When the time comes, when all of this is said and done, we may need to make our own answers once more to any questions that still remain. For now, I will say I have one suggestion, though. I think I recall something about you cursing me with an extended lifespan. And I know I'm going to need your help to pull off this new immortal lifestyle without getting caught. I wish I had a better answer for her, but this was the best that I could do. I hope deeply that the words that revived my spirit can rekindle hers as well. I stared at her to gauge her reaction, to see if her spirit is burning bright within her. Teresa takes in a deep breath and releases a long sigh. Her somber expression finally cracks just the slightest bit as the saddest smile I've ever seen slowly spreads across her lips.
Yes. You are quite right about one thing.
She shifts onto her knees and raises herself back standing up.
I asked the wrong species. That is clear.
She let out a light chuckle.
Yet you do well in helping me solve my doubts. Thank you, Toby.
Thank you, Teresa. I said, raising back to my feet myself.
What are you thanking me for? You are strange.
Teresa giggles again, and I can't help but laugh with her. I don't know how to articulate it to her, but I am simply just thankful for her. With renewed sense of purpose for both of us, I get to explaining to Teresa the plan I had made to escape the town. She seemed reluctant to leave,
Her sense of duty still remains strong inside her. But the town is gone. We will have better chances getting public attention and coming back here with reinforcements than try to take on this all by ourselves. Shortly after finishing my explanation, she looks to the sky.
We have until noon tomorrow to prepare to reach the point for reinforcements then, correct? What time is it currently?
Time? Let me see. I checked my phone quickly. Almost 1 p.m.
Perfect. I can be finished before dusk. Follow me down the steps.
She pulls me by the arm. Steps? Is your head okay? You don't have a second story, Teresa. I question as she drags me to the middle of the house. She smirks back at me and kicks aside the carpet in the center of the floor, revealing a hatch. You have a basement? Why didn't you use that to hide me in when I was injured? Or when the Wolvenir attacked here? Teresa rolls her eyes at my questions. The basement, though, the entire time. If we were going to be hiding from creatures with animalistic senses of smell, being underground seemed like a great place to be.
If I kept you down here longer than 15 minutes, you would die from a heat stroke, Teresa said, matter of fact.
I didn't understand what she meant at first, but I learned quickly as we got deeper. At the end of the steps stood a giant slab of a stone door. Teresa gripped the hands of the door with both hands, and with much strain she pushes the door open. The wave of heat that followed nearly knocked me out.
If you value your skin on your bones, you will stay here.
She pokes me in the chest to emphasize her point, before slipping past the small gap she made between the door and the wall. I leaned over a bit to glimpse through the door, and beyond it I see the most brilliant white fire I have ever laid my eyes on. It was as though someone had gone and plucked the flare from a neutron star and placed it here. As I gazed into the flame, suddenly Teresa's face eclipsed it, causing me to jump back.
If you stared it too long, it will make you blind, she said with a cheerfulness that made it hard to tell if she was joking or being serious.
She took an old leather strap with some notches carved into it and began wrapping it around my arm.
What is that? That is no normal fire, I say, still enchanted in the mystery of the white flame. Correct. It's not a normal fire. It is my fire, the last fire I breathed before disguising myself in this form. It bears a piece of my soul, and such will burn eternal unless I snuff it out.
She now measures around my waist and shoulders.
It is the only thing capable of shaping dragon scales, which is why I need to keep it nearby. I will be making some upgrades to my armor before the mission tomorrow. I have never encountered one of those behemoths before. The winged ones, Vrax we call them, I have encountered. The most difficult part about fighting them is simply reaching them. The large one is the new weapon, however, and in such a case I must be prepared. I have also been made aware of an opening in my armor that must be closed. It will be a busy day and I must start immediately if I want any sleep. So off with you. Shout if you need me.
With that, Teresa begins to shut the enormous stone door.
One thing I forgot to mention. I don't know why you would ever get such an idea, but just to be safe, never touch my fire. The pain the fire burns into those it contacts remains for the rest of their lives. That would be a very long time for you to be burning. And some even speculate the flame permanently burns the very soul. So who is even sure if even death is an escape?
She flashes a smile towards me, and once again I can't tell if she's charming or threatening.
Just be safe, Toby, and I'll be finished in a flash,
Teresa says, finally slamming the door shut. The temperature of the basement hallway instantly drops from surface of the sun levels to volcano levels. While Teresa is sealed inside her makeshift furnace, I wonder what to do in the meantime. At the very least, I don't have to worry about her anymore. She seemed to heal extremely quickly, both physically and emotionally. I still am trying to make sense of her actions earlier, though. Why did she throw me off so violently? She didn't even seem conscious of the fact that she even threw me either. Her eyes, too. There were so many questions I still have. But they will have to wait, though. I decided to utilize my time going over some of the finer details of the plan. I went to Teresa's telescope to check out the condition of the town. Most of the buildings still seemed to be intact, although some are burnt out and others flattened. I tried to avert my scope from the dark stains that litter the streets and windows. I purposefully avoid looking at my house. I know what I'll see there, and I do not want to have to witness it. First good news is there's no behemoth lurking around. Hopefully, it only comes out at night. The store is on the other side of town. If we follow the path to the road, we could duck into a house if anything gets too close. Most of the lights I see in homes are centered around the business section of town, likely where most of the office computers are. If we stick to the far side of the residential section, we could avoid the more active areas until the very end. Then we make the mad dash for the store when we see Justin pulling in with the delivery truck. The sun starts to set, and I make my way back down to Teresa's house. Looking around, it seems like she's still hard at work, so I quickly visit some of the fishing lines I left out and manage to bring a couple of fish catches back for dinner. As if she could smell me cooking, Teresa comes bursting from the hatch right as the stew was done cooking.
"It would be a true blessing if you made a bowl for me as well," Teresa says, peering over my shoulder at the pot.
"Well, you wouldn't be a goddess if you weren't blessed, now, would you be?" I joke as I pour a small portion into a bowl and hand her the rest in the pot. Teresa's eyes glisten, and with no hesitation, she begins devouring the stew right as she stands. I take my bowl and carefully step around her as the first half of the pot vanishes before she even takes a breath. "So, how's the upgrading going? Thirsty work, I bet." I chuckle as I take a seat at the table. Teresa seemed that she had remembered that she had company, and sheepishly grabs a spoon and brings her pot over to the table.
"Look for yourself,"
she gestures as she leans her torso over to the side. Where once would have existed a slight gap in the armor now lies a finely woven stretch of chainmail.
"It's not as sturdy as my whole armor, but it does not reduce my flexibility, and it will stop any further attempts to plunge a blade into my side,"
she demonstrates by trying to stab herself with a spoon.
"Very impressive. Have you worked on anything else? It seems like you were down there for a long time. Granted, I don't know how long it would take to make such a chainmail."
"It requires a fair amount of time, which is the reason I insisted on beginning my work immediately. But no, it wasn't the only work I had made for today. However, that project is not yet finished. You will have to wait until I'm done for me to show it to you."
"You shall not rush perfection."
She flashes a smug smile at me. In only a couple minutes, her pot is completely empty.
"No time to waste. Back to work I go."
Teresa rushes back down the stairs, slamming the hatch behind her. With night approaching, I hope the noise doesn't attract any unwanted attention. But at the same time, with Teresa awake again, I feel much less afraid as I had been for the past few weeks. The exhaustion of it all catches up to me, and I find myself falling asleep the second I laid down. I wake up the next day and open my eyes to a bright and shiny set of armor on a surprisingly well-crafted armor stand, right in front of me. I guess Teresa was eager to show off her hard work on improving her armor, among the addition of chainmail between each joint of the armor. A freshly made helmet sits atop the stand. I always thought that she could use a helmet out in battle. It seemed reckless to leave the head of all places unprotected. With impeccable timing as always, Teresa walks in the door with three rabbits in her fist.
"You have awakened. Excellent. Tell me your thoughts."
She eagerly awaits my response as she skins the rabbits of their pelts. "It's incredible. The chainmail is so finely woven. You would think it was one single flexible cloth. The helmet is a good choice, too. I don't know how strong your skull is in human form, but I imagine taking hits to the head still isn't very good for you. I think you will be even more unstoppable than you were before." Teresa giggles at my comments, and it takes me a moment to realize why. Looking her way again, I notice she is wearing her armor, and her sword is sheathed with her. I look again at the armor set before me.
"I appreciate your admiration. It was difficult crafting it in such little time, but you are soft and weak. I knew to protect you, I would have to make something that will last longer than the stone. This time, I will also entrust you with a weapon,
but on the condition that you must remain defensive in combat. If I observe you becoming careless, or too emboldened by your newfound robustness, I will take back the sword until you can be humble. Teresa puts the rabbits to cook and comes to sit beside me.
Teresa, I don't know what to say. Thank you so much. This is beyond incredible.
I find myself overwhelmed as I touch the smooth surface of the chest plate.
Say nothing more about it. I simply just did what needed to be done to protect the one I have sworn to protect.
She pats me on the back.
Have you tried putting it on? I want to be sure the measurements are correct.
Teresa takes the helmet off the stand and plops it onto my head. It's an excellent fit. It holds up steady without feeling like it's constricted my head or any other movement. I haven't had a chance to try it, but the helmet feels perfect, thank you. I wrap Teresa in a bear hug, and she jokingly pats me on the helmet.
I am pleased to hear it.
To answer your earlier question, that helmet will stop nothing that my skull cannot. My kind's bones and scales grow stronger with age. Therefore, if I wish to, I could crack that helmet with a good headbutt. These are made of my scales when I was young, still stronger than any other substance known to me, but not stronger than my current strength. The only thing that I know that could crack my armor would be an elder dragon, but none of my kin would turn against us. Doing so would be death of our species.
Well, if the armor could only be broken by that of a dragon, I say that's strong enough for me.
I chuckle before a question rises within me.
I know you said before that you're not exactly a dragon. You use the term for my sake, so I don't get confused. But what do you call yourself?
Trovenir. That is the name of our people.
The ancients who walked this planet before all others. We ruled in relative peace until the day the Monumentals emerged from below.
Teresa's expression became pained as she recalls the memories of the Underdwellers.
Can you help me get the rest of this armor on? I suggest, trying to change the subject.
Moi? Oh, well, of course.
If it needs any adjustments, speak clearly and I shall fix it accordingly.
Teresa jumps up, pulling off my helmet, and slamming the chest plate onto my shoulders.
A little more gentle, please.
I wince as the impact of the armor shocks my entire skeleton.
Oh dear, please excuse me. I must remember you are fragile.
She gently pats my shoulder while she fastens the chest plate to me.
I like to think of it more like you're ridiculously strong, I joke, slipping my legs into the chassis.
If it preserves your ego, you may continue to believe that. There. Now, do you feel fit? Now, how does that full set feel?
Teresa eagerly jumps back to admire her work.
Feels absolutely perfect. Thank you again, Teresa.
I do a few stretches to test everything out, but the armor feels simply like a second layer of skin. It feels natural to be in.
I am pleased to hear it. Now sit. We must eat, then we must move. Do not forget what day it is.
Teresa brings over the cooked rabbits, and we both begin eating without hesitation. In all the excitement, I had momentarily forgotten about what day it was. Today is the day we escape the Underdwellers, and finally feel safe for the first time in what felt like a lifetime. Teresa finishes eating quickly, and wastes no time getting into her armor and grabbing her sword and shield. As I rush to finish the last bit of food, she hands me her shield.
I did not have time to make another. The stone shield I carved for you did not seem to suffice last encounter either. Be sure to treat this shield carefully. If you lose it, I will not have a replacement.
Can't you make another?
Not that I'm going to lose it.
I won't.
But are shields that hard to make?
I ask her, feeling the weight of the shield grow as she leaves it in my hands.
Shields are not difficult to make, no. Rather, they're time-consuming to make. My true issue would be the lack of supplies. After we leave here, I will not have my scales to create replacements. I could not hide my existence long if we arrived in your new settlement carrying scales of a dragon.
Teresa heads towards the door with resolve as I took a moment to steel myself.
Okay,
We could do this. Get through town, get to the truck, get out of Dodge. Most importantly, do not lose that damn shield. With my objectives reaffirmed in my head, I picked up my sword on the laptop bag as we head into the woods. The first steps are smooth sailing. The forest gives a lot of cover, and the sunlight seems to be keeping most of the monsters indoors. Once we emerge from the woods, all signs of life vanish. No sound can be heard besides the sly crunching and cracking of gravel, and the jingle of our armor as pieces shuffle within our movements. We stick close to the houses, ready to dash inside at any sight of danger. As we make our way down the street, a footprint has created a crater within the road. The foot alone was easily the length of my body, and the former Ford flattened into sheet metal within the print tells me all I need to know about the strength of the monster. As I suspected, all forms of vehicles I saw were destroyed. Not even bicycles were spared. The underdwellers do not want any risk of us escaping. We keep moving until we get close enough to the edge of the residential district. Just a dash down this lane, and we will be diving into the business district and towards the grocery store. The town is still silent. Everything in my being is shouting at me that it's not right. Are the underdwellers nocturnal? I mean, it would make sense, since they are subterranean creatures. Would they truly be so bold as to not have any guards whatsoever, though? They wouldn't even need to guard it themselves. They have creatures to use at their whim. I looked over to Teresa, and she points at herself, then at her head. Then she points at both of us and points forward. I know. We keep moving forward. She's smart. She learns and adapts quickly. Maybe when all this is said and done, I'll teach her how to use my laptop, so she could understand I'm not just staring at some magical rectangle. Heading into the business section, I see a faint glowing coming from one of the few undamaged stores. I peek my head around the window to see what's causing the light, and from inside, I see the underdweller we fought standing in front of a crowd of dozens. I thought he was the only one, but he either called in backup or we had the whole colony underneath us. They were using a projector and a computer, giving a lecture not unlike what you'd see from a college professor. On the screen behind him stood an article about the United States, military might. The underdweller giving the presentation seemed to be translating the writing to the others. I guess they do have speech translators, but they are not exposed to human writing. Or maybe they don't know how to translate writing that is not physical. The underdweller slowly types, letter by letter, a search for nuclear weapons. He clicks on the first link on the results page and begins lecturing again. I notice his audience seems to be taking notes. He creates a search again and begins typing a search for world military before Teresa tugs at my shoulder. A part of me wants to bust in the door and slaughter every one of those creatures in there, but I know we are outnumbered, and who knows what weapons they possess. Reluctantly, I turn back to Teresa, and we keep pressing forward. We finally reach the store, although it has seen better days. The back half of the store is completely caved in, and the front half is littered with stains. I am not sure if it's cruelty or mercy that there are no bodies left to identify who left the stain. All that remains are some bloodied fragments, scraps, and thin shards of bone. Teresa looks on in horror and pain at the carnage left of what once was the people she loved to protect. We walk inside and I lead Teresa towards the manager's office. The door is locked, but I remembered a spare set of keys kept hidden in the janitor's closet. I once helped the shopkeeper, Mr. Chang, from when I helped clean up after Jason got really sick and vomited all down the aisle. He was trying to make it to the bathroom, but he didn't get there in time. I felt really bad leaving it up to older Mr. Chang to clean up by himself. I once asked why he didn't have Jody take up the store for him, but he said she took up running the store of her uncle, who sadly passed away unexpectedly down in Nevada. He offered that if he ever got too old to run the place, that he would give me first dibs, if she wanted to move back, and me second dibs if she hadn't. As he pulls out a bottle of heavy cleaner, he jiggled it in front of me. He told me,
if there is ever an emergency with me or my missus, I need you to take over the store while I'm away. I'll give you a call and you can run everything from my office."
As I opened the container and dumped the key into my hand, I wonder if he did call on that dreaded night, the night the Wolfnir attacked. Although he must have thought that I was already dead, did he call me in one last attempt for help? The key fits, and the door quietly swings open. The inside of the office is pristine, completely unaware of the horrors that raged outside. Teresa and I slip in quietly, shutting the door behind us. I sit in the chair at Mr. Chang's desk, and bump into the mouse on the computer. To my utter shock, the screen lights up. Despite being half-wrecked, the building still somehow had power here. I take a mental note to be on the lookout for any live wires on the ground before hurrying to plug in my laptop and phone. I had done my best to preserve their battery life, but both have gotten low. As I finish pulling the chargers from my bag and plugging them into the wall, I glance at the time. 9:12 in the morning. The truck is always scheduled to arrive around noon. I looked out the window and stared down the tree that leaves my town. I feel within me the urge to just bust through the glass and go running down that road. Away from my nightmares, my fears. Run as far away from everything that has tortured me over these past few weeks, months. I don't even know if I could tell anymore. I don't even remember what day it started. All I know is today is the day it ends. I settle my nerves and find it within me to hold myself back for a little bit longer. I will wait for the truck and I will leave here soon enough. In the closed-off room, Teresa and I feel comfortable enough to whisper to each other. She spends a lot of our time waiting, asking about each and everything we passed along the way here. Questions, I'm sure, may have been burning inside of her for a long time. How do cars work? How do you shape such large rocks with such little strength? How does electricity activate so many things? How do you harvest electricity when there is no lightning? By the end of all of her questions, I had lost track of time. I glance at the clock again. It's 1 p.m. How often is Justin late? He couldn't have been early, and we would have missed him, right? Did I get my days wrong? What if they had already killed him? As doubt began to overtake me, I heard the subtle roaring of an engine in the distance. Teresa and I rush over to the window to see a truck heading up the road towards us. We quickly rush to the door and wave him down as he pulls up next to us.
"Jesus, what the hell happened here? Y'all look like you were hit by an earthquake. Is everyone okay? What the hell are you wearing, and where's Mr. Chang?"
Justin looks around, astonished by the wreckage.
"I promise, Justin, it's worse than just an earthquake, and we need to get in that truck and turn back now."
I try to push him back towards the truck.
"Hold up for a second, Toby. Calm down and talk me through this, okay? Let's start with what happened here. And if anyone needs any urgent medical attention, I got a kid in the back end."
"Justin, please, we don't have time. We need to go now. Everyone is dead. We are the only ones left."
As I plead to Justin the move, a roar that shakes the earth comes from our right.
"What in the hell? Okay, kid, you win. Get in now."
Justin turns to jump back into the driver's seat, but before he could take a step, the behemoth comes charging from down the wood line. It levels trees and buildings in its unstoppable sprint before plowing into the truck, tearing it to scraps. The behemoth had to be about 60 feet high, an ape-like monstrosity with long arms and muscles that would make dinosaurs look flimsy. I had no idea how something so large could hide from us, until I noticed circuitry falling from its body as it rose back to its feet. The beast's image distorted and reappeared for a few moments until the machines finally gave out. With an anguished cry, the behemoth shrank in size before my eyes. The form contracted and twisted until the creature had been reduced to 12 feet tall. The beast looked towards us, eyes filled with rage, and I could feel an arm on my chest pushing me back.
"Kids, you both run as far away as you can. I don't think after what we just saw, the bullets are going to stop this thing."
Justin unholstered a pistol he had concealed on him. I never knew he carried one.
"No, hold on, Justin. That thing will kill you. Teresa and I can handle this thing. Trust me, please. You have no idea what's going on here.
Teresa speaks up towards Justin. Please forgive Toby, he misspeaks. Teresa herself can fend off the beast. Toby can take you to safety.
She steps forwards towards the behemoth and braces herself for its attack.
Is that pretend knight armor and sword really going to be enough to fight that thing?
Justin looks over towards me for an answer.
For her, yeah. For me and you, probably not. Which is why we're going to listen to her and get going.
I motion to Justin to follow me, and we head towards the back of the store. The behemoth charges at Teresa, but she holds firm. As it collides with her, she digs her heels into the ground and flips it over her, slamming it into the ground. It kicks back at Teresa, unfazed by the hit it just took, and sends her slamming into the wall of the store. Justin and I turn the corner, but the sounds of the scuffle continue. As we look from where to go next, from the power plant comes an enormous dark purple beam. The beam envelops the sky, spreading out and creating a dome around the area. Everything becomes shrouded in darkness, and the howling begins again. I pick a random direction and run with Justin. Unfortunately, because I get turned around in a panic of everything, we ended up running in the direction Teresa and I come from. In hindsight, I don't know if the result would have changed if we did go another way. The Underdwellers knew that Justin was going to arrive today, and they knew he was the last one who would notice if our town was suddenly vanished. As we ran down the road, we were cut off by three Underdwellers and another behemoth. Without hesitation, Justin fired at the group. His bullets damaged the behemoth's device and struck one of the Underdwellers in the head, killing it instantly. The two remaining Underdwellers were paralyzed in fear until they heard the clicking of Justin's handgun. One signaled the behemoth to charge as the other drew a piece of metal that expanded into a spear. The behemoth charged directly at Justin, but I was able to intercept and tackle it into the building next to us. I struggle to hold the behemoth down, but it gets the upper hand, launching me into the ceiling and then punching me across the street. As I try to catch my breath, I could see Justin fighting both the Underdwellers with a piece of rebar. They are trying relentlessly to stab him with their spears, but he manages to pry and dodge each time.
Ha! That's 15 years of fencing you're going up against, you nasty freaks!
Justin mocks the easily outclassed Underdwellers as he parries their spear again. This time, he rushes the disarmed Underdweller, keeping his target between him and the second spearman, and slams the rebar into its head. It falls to the ground, and he tosses the rebar for the creature's dropped spear.
Come on! I'll drive a hole right through your skull!
I turn back to see the behemoth charging towards me. I sidestep at the last second, and the beast goes through both walls of the building, caving into the roof. I see from the corner of my eye the Underdweller on the ground summon something from his wrist. In seconds, I hear the shrill shrieks of those damn bats, the Vrax, coming our way. While I am distracted, the behemoth comes bursting through the rubble once again and catches me. It slams me into the ground before tossing me up into the air. As I am soaring, I am caught by the swarm of bats, and they break their teeth trying to take chunks out of me. I struggle to break free as they claw at my armor trying to tear it off. One of their talons rips my shield off the armor, but it frees up my arm. I start swinging wildly, slashing through the bats surrounding me. The bat carrying me struggles to keep height, and as we near the height where I think I could fall and it wouldn't kill me, I tear my sword through its wing, causing us both to plummet back down. The fall is hard, and I struggle to try and stand. Before I could even sit up, I feel the fists of the behemoth slamming me back into the ground. It strikes again and again, and I am pinned, unable to stop the barrage of attacks.
Toby, catch!
Justin throws Teresa's shield as it bounces off the head of the behemoth, grabbing its attention.
Shit, I should have played more baseball! Come at me, big, hairy, and ugly!
Justin readies his spear as the behemoth roars him.
Justin, no! Dodge! You can't fight it!
The behemoth charges at Justin with all its power.
Neither can you, kid!
Justin thrusts the spear into the behemoth's thigh as it collides into him. They both go rolling into a utility pole, which snaps and falls on top of Justin's leg. He screams in pain as both his legs are crushed. I rush over to help him as the behemoth pulls the spear from its leg.
Stop, Toby. I have played hero with you, but I think the game is over for me now. I'm sorry, kid.
As the behemoth rises again, Justin grabs it and grabs the loose wire next to him. With a sickening crackle of electricity, both Justin and the behemoth are electrocuted. I watch, powerless to help as Justin sizzled until the spasms of the behemoth body knocked them both loose. Sorrow and rage flood me once again as I see the underdwellers attempt to flee. I pick up Teresa's shield before I rush one down and tear my sword through its back. The second one calls another flock of piranha bats to come pick him up. I ready my shield to throw and knock him down, but Teresa flashes past me. In a single leap, she cleaves every bat in the sky purposefully, leaving the underdweller untouched as he crashes back down to earth. With one swift strike, she removes the head from the underdweller's shoulders.
"Do not be so careless with the things that do not belong to you," she says, restrapping the shield tight to my arm.
She glances over to the dead behemoth and sees the burnt body of Justin. Her face sinks, and her eyes close for a moment as she remains still. When she reopens her eyes, her look of fierce determination has returned as she pulls me back towards the store.
"We must leave now. The Wolfnir are all flooding the village, and if they catch us, I will not be able to fight them all."
She picks up the pace, and we won't stop until we're at the front of the door again.
"We must hide as best we can. The blood will cover our scent."
As Teresa reaches for the door handle, she pauses again. She turns to face me.
"He was kind and selfless, Justin. I liked him."
Those beasts are a far more difficult enemy than you could have ever encountered, even in their smaller state.
"You did your best, and I'm sure, but nothing could have prepared you for that brute strength.
You are not responsible. I will make an exception on taking back my sword this once, since the underdwellers were once combatants.
You must not use it for any offensive tool again, especially not as a tool for revenge. This is the only exception I will make."
She attempts to make a stern look, but her eyes are full of sympathy.
Thank you, Teresa. It won't happen again.
Although, I'm beginning to wonder how many of my friends can die before me until I am responsible for their death. I reach past her for the door, getting us both inside before quietly locking it behind us. The once pristine carpet now stained with the red dripping off our armor. From our swords drips the pale blood of the underdwellers gathered in a pool beside both of us. Again, it feels like a last bit of peace and normalcy I had to cling to has been tainted. The last person from my life before this, gone as quickly as we were reunited. I shut the blinds over the window and shove the desk up against to it to keep the prowling wolf near from seeing any movement inside. I could hear the howling all around me. The howling that has taken my town, taken the last piece of my old life left. There are so many Wolfnir out there. I am out of ideas once again. I didn't come with the plan B. Teresa sits at the ready, but I don't have a clue how we're getting out of this. We are trapped in here now. There is no escape from this town. The only thing left to do is fight. So we take the offense. If we survive the night.